Thanks, Don.
But I'm also a soil scientist, so. Okay. Wow, look at all these people sticking around at the end of a conference in Long Beach, California. Must be a nice place. It is. How do I advance the slide? Thank you. Which way? That way? Down. Thanks. Okay. Dealing with extremes and uncertainty in California, we are used to extremes. We get floods, major, major floods, and we get droughts. As Carrie just mentioned, when we build reservoir systems and things like that, and we do our stream improvements, it's not just for water storage, for water supply. It's to keep things from flooding downstream. Our precipitation over the state is both extremely variable over time and location. So the bar graph shows you basically the overall annual precipitation in California for a year with 2013, because we don't have the end of this calendar year yet, so we can't put that in there. I think it's going to be a little bit above the 2013 year. But you can see it bounces all around. So in the early 70s, the late 70s we had a drought. The early 90s we had a drought. 2000, end of like 8, 7, 8, we had a drought. Oh, gosh, I guess we had a lot more droughts. See how they dipped down there. We are following an extreme condition, though, because we've had three really dry years this 2014 year. Precipitation is also variable over the state. You can see in the northern part of the state, it's we've got a fair amount of precipitation, and then it gets dry. And then there's our Central Valley right there. Oh, and look, here's the Sierras. That's green. That's where we get a lot of precipitation. Annual runoff is extremely variable. As you can see, this is like historic runoff. Now keep in mind that this runoff is gauged runoff, stream gauged runoff. So it's not taking into, it's a little artifacted because you're going to have the reservoirs storing things and releasing things over time. But even so, it's still very variable. It's variable monthly. You will note that in the winter months, pretty much from November through April, is when we get about 85% of our rainfall. It is common not to have any rain in the summertime in most places. So we have some reservoirs that are essential to making it through the summer season for our people, our environment, and our agriculture. Snowpack, number one, the Sierras. Surface storage, those reservoirs we talked about. We have huge ones, we have small ones, all over the place. We have groundwater that's a huge resource that's necessary, and we have soil moisture. Well, let me rephrase that. We typically have those things. The major surface water reservoirs that we have is Snowpack. We have the Sacramento Valley Reservoir Storage and the San Joaquin Valley Reservoir Storage, and those are the million acre feet. You will see that Snowpack is the largest, and it's over one-third of the total surface water storage. Sacramento Valley Reservoir Storage, you know, we've dammed up a lot of those big streams so that we can hold it. Same with San Joaquin. A 5-degree increase in temperature can lead to more than 4 to 5 million acre-feet decrease in Sierra snowpack. That is assuming, you know, a normal precipitation-type situation. In California, water, most of the, you know, we talk about how much water is used in agriculture and urban, and in overall, the environment uses about half. And that's what falls on it naturally, what flows down the streams. It's not developed water. We don't have much control over that, so we can't really deal with that part. Then we have the developed water, which is agriculture and urban. And of the developed water, that means about 80% is used in agriculture. Ah, I'm missing my legend. Oh. There. Okay, California's surface water supply and use. Remember that precipitation that showed it much greener up in the north and much redder down in the south? So about 80% of our precipitation is up north, and then 20% down south. But only about one-third of that water is used up north, and two-thirds is used down south. It has to get there through our systems. Water supply system. Here we go. Okay, it's a big mess. It's supposed to be. When I moved to California, I discovered a new term in hydrology that I hadn't considered before coming from the Midwest. It's called a distributary. So you cannot do a watershed delineation analysis and say all the water in that watershed is going to these things, because water gets pulled out and diverted somewhere else, pumped, siphoned, put in big water projects, moved all around, and all of a sudden you don't know how much water you've got in your system because it's moving all over the place. Okay, so 2013-2014 redefined dry in California. Now remember that snowpack is over one-third of our surface water storage. That was it in 2013, which was actually kind of a dry year too. And this was this year. Look, no snow. That totally sucked. We need that snow because that is one of our longest reservoirs to take us through the summer as it slowly melts. We put it into the reservoirs, helps refill the reservoir use that's been used, you know, throughout the summer. And so it was about the same at the beginning, these reservoir levels of our growing season, and this is what we ended up with. You don't have to look at much, except you can see how low that blue bar is and where that red line is. Red line is average, blue is where we were at on October 19th, and yellow is the overall capacity. Pretty grim. And this shows how grim. If you haven't been to this site, if you get a look online, they have this slidey view where they have the major reservoirs, and they have before a normal year and after, and you can slide it across. It's totally dramatic how you can see what's going on. Drought snapshot. This was our third consecutive dry year. The state snow water content going into the growing season was 25% of average, and by June it was nothing. Northern Sierra precipitation was 61% of average, and it ended up the water year. The water year runs from October 1st through September 30th, was 63% of average. Southern precipitation, 50% of average, on and on. When they started the year, they thought that they weren't going to be able to deliver any of our state water project water. That's the water that the state manages, collects in reservoirs, and ships down and around to different people. 0% means you've got a contract to have a certain amount of water, but it all depends on whether or not the water's there. They were thinking there wasn't going to be any water available to ship to people. We ended up actually being able to give them 5%. And the lowest before that I have records for was 35%. So this was pretty extreme. People needed that water. They didn't get it. And this is our drought monitor. And this is where we stand. Needless to say, darker is worse. And this is the seasonal outlook. Doesn't look like it's getting much better. So when we don't have surface water, because we don't have any water in our reservoirs, we're not getting it in precipitation, what do people do? They pump groundwater. That is historically and reasonably a good emergency supply for people when we don't have surface water. But we've been doing it for many years, and it's going down. So wells are being deepened throughout the state. Groundwater overdraft is chronic. We have falling groundwater levels, wells are running dry, people having to redrill, land subsidence, infrastructure damage, reduced groundwater storage capacity, because when you suck that water out of that porous matrix, the weight squashes it down, and now your availability to put more water back into it, even if it rains, you've got less volume there to store. So you end up with decreased groundwater storage. You degrade water quality because you get contaminants moving down there. Things get a little saltier. Stream depletion. Some streams are recharged by groundwater. Of course, some streams also recharge groundwater the other way. And on the coastal areas, you suck the water out, the fresh water out of those aquifers, and you end up with more seawater intrusion. So, classic picture, subsidence from 1925 to 1977 in the Central Valley. And then more recently, we ended up with cracks along one of our main distribution canals because of land subsidence. And this is the general, you know, expected potential subsidence that we're going to be experiencing because of the groundwater pumping we've been doing recently to survive our drought conditions. So we also use about 15% hydroelectric. And when we don't have the water to run through those hydroelectric systems, we don't have that electricity. We also use, when we're pumping groundwater, we're using more energy to do that. Okay, so agriculture impacts. There was a National Drought Mitigation Center estimate that we've left about 350,000 acres unplanted, 1.7 billion loss for the agriculture industry, jobs, ripple effects. You know, it's kind of an estimate because when the supply is short, you can usually raise prices on the economics, but still, this is just for some of the crops that, you know, they reported, not the good stuff. So, state of California in 2013 established a drought task force. We were in the process of updating our California water plan. 2014, we got a drought emergency declaration. The California Water Action Plan was just released. We got some drought legislation for more dollars to do things, and the drought legislation, we appropriated money to help, hopefully. IRWM is Integrated Regional Water Management Projects, which are for a variety of things, urban and agriculture. This is not a part of the drought proclamation stuff. This is something that we had going since 2009, the Agriculture Water Conservation Act, which is a part of Senate Bill SBX 77. Requires large agricultural water suppliers, 25,000 or more irrigated acres. They must do an agricultural water management plan. They must implement certain efficient water management practices. Two critical ones that they must implement are measuring water delivered to the customers and implementing a volumetric pricing structure. No, before that, they did not have to measure the water delivered to customers, so we don't know what's there. What's happened. In 2014, just this recently passed, we passed groundwater legislation that is just phenomenal because this legislation is establishing sustainable groundwater management. Right now, before in the state, we didn't have anything that would regulate groundwater and manage it. Some groundwater basins had adjudicated legal battles fought out for that management, but the majority did not. So there were no restrictions on what anybody could do. And in private wells, you can suck up if you can. It's yours. Some of the public agencies had to do a little bit more. So this is this is where it starts. Back in the 1919 with Colonel Marshall, the Marshall Plan. I got to read this to you. California's potential wealth and land reaches into billions of dollars. 12 million acres lie all around us, bristling with invitations to help ourselves. Yet there they remain, practically untouched. He's talking a lot about the Central Valley here. The people of California, indifferent to the bountiful gifts that nature has given them, sit idly by waiting for rain, indefinitely postponing irrigation, and allowing every year millions and millions of dollars in water to pour unused into the sea. When there are hungry thousands in this and other countries pleading for food, and when San Francisco and the Bay Cities, the metropolitan district of California, are begging for water. That was the view. Our population's a little bigger now, and we've developed all that stuff, and we're kind of running into some issues. Department of Water Resources' overall mission is to protect California's water. Enough said. Oh, we do the California Water Plan. So, what's going to happen? Population growth and movement always happens. What's been happening and going to probably continue to happen, shift to permanent crops. What is the problem with that or advantage? Some permanent crops use less water. But if there's a drought, you can't not grow them. They have to survive if they're irrigated. Increasing flood risk. Climate change is predicting more winter rains, not necessarily snow. So that means more runoff, more unpredictable stuff. We have to do something about it. Decline delta watersheds, impaired water body, climate change, aging flood and water and flood systems, and our economy and our people. So climate change really adds to the uncertainty that we've already seen in the water supply due to the variable precipitation and storage and temperature. Diminishing snowpack, earlier snowmelt means when they build those reservoirs and when they think about, okay, how much am I going to release? They have to think about, okay, I need some capacity. If there's a lot of rain, I can hold it back, and I'm not going to flood downstream. But at the same time, so they kind of leave it in the beginning of the year. At the same time, they need to fill it, let it fill up enough so that if there's no more rain, they have supply. That makes it harder to predict when you've got climate change. Rising sea level, higher air water temperatures, more evaporation, more crop evapotranspiration, maybe more crop growth. And California's population is growing, predicted to grow about 15 million by 2060. We just published the 2013 update. It is how we look at water. It is a resource. It started off just, you know, the planners and the policy people getting together in 1957, coming up with how we're going to manage our water. But more recently, the last several cycles, we have decided, maybe it should be a collaborative process. We should find out what other people. So it's a huge collaborative process now, people looking at the different resource strategies, what's happening, things like that, to come up with integrating a way to figure out what we're going to do. We have to look at public safety, environmental stewardship, and the economic stability. Three things: integrated water management, government agency alignment, and investment in innovation and infrastructure. That government agency alignment one is a tough one in California, I have to say. So we go from planning to action plans, which is where we came. Let's skip that because something beeped. You can read these as they pop up. You're smart. Okay. 30 resource management strategies that come in out of our plan. Reduce water demand, improve operational efficiency and transfers, increase water supply, improve flood management, improve water quality, practice resource stewardship, and new, we've got education and outreach, sediment management, water and culture. There are separate chapters in the water plan which you can go to and download the thing and you can read what the collaborative process has come up with for these. And here you go. Here's how you can do it. Here's our action plan currently: make conservation a California way of life, manage and prepare for dry periods, as well as expand water storage capacity, improve groundwater management, etc. This is theoretically how we're going to get to keeping things going. So in California, drought is a way of life, but then again, so are floods, and we have to manage and prepare for both. We can't dismiss either one of them. Changing climate is only going to change things more. Questions?
Any questions for Sabrina? We have time for a few. I'm wondering how the depletion of groundwater affects the potential for flooding in those areas, or are they high enough so that they'll get flooded?
Where
farms have been, the land has been lowered by groundwater depletion, if those areas are more susceptible to flooding?
They are not really more susceptible to flooding probably than they were, because we've got these lovely reservoirs that kind of help hold the water back. But some of the areas in particular, I believe Jay might talk about the Delta area in particular, subsidence there because it's so close. The Delta area, if we can go back to a picture of California. Okay, we'll use this one. So the Central Valley is mostly this stuff here that we're looking at, the groundwater there. Water comes down here, water comes down here. They all flow this way, and then they come right out here. And this is the Delta area. All this drainage, except when it shifts down south, comes through here. And so by the time you get to the bottom of the system, subsidence and lowered levels can have a huge effect.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. Knowing that really one of the things that brings about change or people to demand change is what's going to impact them directly rather than the big picture or what's going to cost them directly. Some of the areas you highlighted there are more government-based or larger infrastructure, and some of them are local, very small. So in these reports that are produced, is there any way of demonstrating what those costs are or what those impacts can be to make it more transparent? So there'll always be naivety, but some people will switch on to those or be aware of what they might be, and also the longevity of them. You know, in my opinion, dams have a 35-year life. You know,
right,
as really working either because of climate or siltation or something like that.
I believe they do have some of that in the water plan in certain sections, and but yeah, it's going to cost a boatload. That's why it's kind of, I'm really excited about the groundwater legislation, because it probably passed a lot because of the current drought, and people started feeling it and realized how important it was.
Oh, any desalination in the future, like desalination?
Oh yes, we're exploring desalination. We have huge regulatory barriers to things like that, as well as infrastructure barriers. It's and costs a lot, and there's a lot of power involved in it. You know, we've got agriculture all in that Central Valley. That's a little far removed away from like the ocean, not necessarily far removed from the groundwater. We have all these regulations that say what the quality of water needs to be when we put it on the land, so it or drink it ourselves, so it has to be taken care of to that level. In addition to that, when you desalinate water, you end up with this waste product that often ends up being hazardous, and then you have to dispose of that.
We have a question that came in from online. Is there a measurable amount of groundwater depletion seen with this year's heavy reliance on groundwater?
Yes. Somewhere in all my slides I had a graph. There are many areas that have dropped more than 10 feet within the last year. There are, you know, I had another slide at one point of the number of wells. There was a speckles of wells that had to be deepened because of the declining groundwater levels this year.
I know my family's ranch, we had a pond that's, you know, for the cattle that has never been wet in 50 years. I mean, it's never been dry. It's always been top, even through all the droughts. And of course, it's just a little puddle right now. And so we took advantage of that to desilt and clean it out.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been programs around for the foothills and the valley to clean out all the ponds and dam rehabilitation or any of that?
I am not aware of any right now. And I'm not sure.
So.
Well, you know, we recently went through the whole water bond thing, and I haven't had a chance to even check the papers to see where that went. And there's money passed, yay. There's money for many programs, and I'm not sure where they're going to put the money to. But
okay.
Check with your region, you know, integrated regional water management district and the plans, and see if there's like an IRWM project that could reach out to you guys.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Sabrina.